Blog Talk Radio.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
Greetings, everyone, and thanks for taking the time during this COVID craziness to tune into another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I, as always, am Jason Ophir, joined with my co-host, Maria Wilson Duff. Hello, Maria.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Looks like I made a misspelling when I created the show. The title is Jason's Parasnell UFO Stories. So I think I created a new word. It's going to be my Parasnell.
I didn't even pay attention to that. So,
yeah,
good for telling on yourself on that one.
And you know what? I have the ability to change it, but I don't think I'm going to change it. I think it adds character.
It adds something.
Well, there's kind of been a lot going on with me, but let's do you first. We kind of do an update before the show, what's going on in our crazy, wacky lives. What's been going on with you?
I like it when you do me first. It brings me great pleasure, but this week has been a lot of work, as usual. I work myself to death. I enjoy very little. So if you hear the wind chimes and the dog bark, I apologize, but I'm sitting on my back porch. I'm enjoying this wonderful weather that God has brought in all of a sudden in June. Tonight is going to be 55 degrees, and in Kentucky, that's a little weird. But I'm going to sit out here, and I hope you all bear it with me.
Well, sounds good on my end. I haven't heard much of anything. For as far as my life has gotten a little bit crazy lately, the last few days, as I mentioned many times, I live in a radon-infested basement, probably developing cancer cells the entire time I've been here because I live in a basement in a high radon area. But it looks like I'm going to be moving out of this quasi-haunted, dim basement that's infested with spiders and getting a house. Circumstances have come unto me to where I will have an ability to pay cash for a house, so I won't have a mortgage. And I
found. Wonderful.
Yeah, tell me about it. And I found a cute little house. And, I mean, not super little, but it was built in 1925. But it's completely updated and remodeled. I mean, you operate the heat in the house with your cell phone. I mean, super, super fancy, nice stainless steel, marble, huge two sink. I mean, it's awesome. A finished basement. So like it's like having a whole nother apartment minus, you know, a bathroom down there. Big backyard with the thing I'm most excited about is a fire pit, you know, and all that, and very, very cool. I probably won't get it because people are almost literally lining out the door to get this thing, so it's probably going to go above list price, and if it goes above list price, it's going to be too much, but we're going to throw down what I think is a solid offer, and, you know, cash is king, so, you know, who knows, maybe they'll take it, but if not, I am on the market, and I've saved a couple other houses to go look at. And so even if I don't get this one, I've made contacts with this listing agent, and she's going to help me find a house. So very exciting times.
I am excited for you. Definitely. This is just one of the most wonderful things I've heard come out of you in a very long time, Jason. Usually you're gloom and doom.
That's true.
But this is wonderful. I'm happy for you all.
I will say that, you know, this particular house, it's the only house I looked at so far. It's 1925, and you can bet when I was, like, second or third thing I said when I got there is the first one, is it haunted? And has anybody died in the house? Because
tell me don't play that. And
play
you know
that.
It has. It's haunted as hell. And it's just going to ramp up the minute you move in because your life history will prove this point. I'm excited.
These people have only been there for like 4 years, which makes me, you know, wonder. Now, I will say, you know, I kind of have this ghost radar, my vibes, my intuition, which I'm skeptical of, but it's been proven correct in the past. And the upstairs, like I said, it's super fancy, super nice. The basement has a low ceiling. I'm really tall, so I have about an inch of clearance, but I did detect there's a vibe down there. It's mildly uncomfortable, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So I may just stay out of that space, but who knows? I think if it does all pan out, I'll turn it into like a movie room, but I wouldn't sleep down there. There's kind of a funkiness to it.
Yeah, you'll sleep down there. I know how you are.
I'm going to sage the shit out of it. That's what I'm going
to
do.
See.
But other than that, so that's what I'm working on. I am house shopping, and I'm hoping while I am furloughed, let me just say that Oregon Unemployment Department is trash because I've yet to see any money. During this time I'm not working, I have plenty of time to pursue that endeavor.
Well, Vegas opened up, so stay the hell away from that. You'll be all right.
Yeah, I don't see myself going down there anytime soon, although that would be entertaining. But other than that, so that's what's going on with me. Anything else going on you? We got a big subject tonight. We're going to talk about my personal UFO stories, and there are many, and some of them are probably hard to believe.
I kind of want to dig into that. You know, anything else kind of doesn't matter. You talk about it. We've had a few shows where you have talked about things that have happened, but you're kind of sketchy, and then you go into this debunking, denial crap thing you do. So I'm going to drill you tonight. So you just start out however you want here.
It was a cold and stormy night. Initially, it looked like a star in the sky. I'll dig into it. And, you know, this is stuff that happened around 20 years ago. And I'm not the brightest cookie in the jar. You know, my brain has taken it. You know, I used to be a heavy drinker, so I've killed plenty of brain cells. I haven't drank in years. So my memory is a little shoddy. I just can't remember everything. But I certainly have the ability to remember the highlights. And I will say that none of this is BS. This is legit what happened. This is what I remember. Oftentimes there were other people with me. It wasn't just my own perception. And so if you're ready, I'll just dig into how this all started.
You just go right ahead, and I kind of don't care what people think about other people's experiences. So if they think you're lying, oh well, that's their problem, not ours.
I like it. So basically, this is what happened. This all started I lived in California. I was 16, 17 years old. And my parents took me to a boarding school. Now, I was not a problem child in terms of being misbehaved. I just wasn't I wasn't the scholastic type. You know, school's a bunch of crap, and I didn't try very hard. I wasn't like an F student or anything, but, you know, I wasn't a great student throughout my academia. So we went out to this boarding school in Northern California. And what was cool about this school is during the summer, it was a summer camp. So all the students there lived in cabins. And, you know, there's a dining hall. It's out, you know, kind of in the middle of nowhere. There's a river that runs through it, which they dammed up and had canoes. I mean, if you can imagine somebody 16, 17 years old, how awesome that would be to go to school there, you know. The teaching was and the curriculum was complete trash, but it was awesome. It was like essentially going to summer school 24/7.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely amazing. One of the things that happened out there, and I'll kind of get into the UFO situation, was I tended to have a knack to pick up vibes on finding Indian artifacts. It was like everywhere I walked, I was drawn to these places and be like, oh, there's something here, some, you know, arrowhead here, a knife blade here. And I kind of started to think that I, you know, must have Native American me because I'm tuning into the Native American vibe. We now know, thanks to DNA testing sites, I'm about as white as you can get. Well, maybe not, but I'm very, very white. So, but at the time, I was born in Clovis, New Mexico, so I thought, you know, I'm like one of the Navajo things. And so I tended to have this knack to find these artifacts. In fact, I distinctly remember a time there was an area, and there were like two people with me, and I pointed to a specific point, and I said, there's an artifact right there. Went to that point, dug a couple inches with my hand, and there was an artifact. So there was some sort of psychic weird thing. Interestingly, this ability followed me later in life to where I was camping a lot and I could overlook the lay of the land and basically, you know, say where stuff is. Really weird stuff. But anyways, so out there I was doing a lot of stuff like that, you know, so one day my friend there, another student, he had a copy of the book Communion by Whitley Strieber, which has the picture of the alien gray on the front. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's really creepy as hell.
Yeah, really creepy. So I borrowed the book from him and I read it, and it really freaked me out. The cover freaked me out. Everything about it freaked me out. And if you can imagine somebody my age being in a cabin in the middle of the night, it's easy to freak yourself out. And that ability I still carry today. I can freak myself out. I'm an overthinker. So, anyways.
Overachiever on that department.
So over the course of this time there, and I'm going to try and keep the chronologically correct. But it may bounce by a little because of my alcohol-abused brain. So I started to have these symbols come into my mind. And I would write pages of these strange symbols. And out of all these symbols, or what looked like some sort of foreign writing, I zoned in on one particular symbol. And unfortunately, this is over the radio, so it's hard to describe it. The symbol is so powerful, later in life I had it tattooed on me. But I was so obsessed with this symbol that I went down to
the
river.
I need a picture of that tattoo, by the way.
I'll text it to you.
Thanks.
And I made it with rocks on the river. I was just obsessed with the symbol. And as I remember, this came out of nowhere. It was just like all of a sudden the floodgates opened and I was just getting all this writing and stuff like that. And so my time there was relatively uneventful. However, a couple things happened that I remember. I'm sure there was more, but there were a couple highlights. One time we were driving out of the building area up a dirt road, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere, and I saw this white sphere slowly, relatively close, slowly descend from the skies and go behind the trees. And I don't remember much after that, but there were several of us in the car, and I don't know if they saw it or they noticed it. It was very odd. We're not talking like a shooting star. We're talking something that's descending from maybe 500 feet, slowly.
Okay, was there alcohol involved during this or no?
No, the school discouraged alcohol consumption from minors.
Yeah, well, just had to
oddly
ask.
Enough.
Go ahead.
Now, I'm skipping around a little bit because this wasn't the last time I had seen this thing. Years later, I was in the town, which was close by, and I saw the same exact thing, but it wasn't descending straight down from the sky. It was descending in a slow arc, kind of down and then behind the trees. I've seen this same object three times in that area. But let me move on from that. The other thing that happened out there, which was also many years later, I came back to this ranch, this whatever you want to call it, and it was me and my friend, and we were just the only ones on 400 acres, and we were in the dining hall, and I went outside, and again, this is like 5 years later. I think I was in my 20s. You know, we were friends with the people that ran the school and all that, and they had all gone somewhere else, so it was just me and him, and I went outside. It's late at night. I think it was my 10 or 11, and I noticed the stars just kind of descending really slowly down from the tree lines, and they were really, really flashing, but they looked like stars. And so I was watching these, one in particular that seemed rather close. And then time went on. I went back inside, and he had laid down on the couch in the dining hall. And so at this point, I was starting to get freaked out about what I was seeing outside, and I tried to wake him up, and I couldn't wake him up. And so I was getting more and more, I'm like, how could you not wake somebody up? And so this was really starting to freak me out. And so I did the most illogical thing somebody would do. And I don't know why I did this, but what I did was I left the one person on this property, left that building, ran down to one of the cabins, you know, in the dark, and hid in one of the cabins. But I have no memory what happened after that. Why would I do that?
Not at all. Nothing.
Nothing. I have a vague memory of getting to the cabin, maybe getting inside, but I don't remember anything after that. I don't remember the next day. I don't remember anything.
Holy cow.
The last thing you would do would be to leave the one person that's around, whether they can wake up or not. You're not going to leave the sanctum of a large dining hall and the only person there to go outside in the dark, down a long road, to a cabin that's in the blackness. It makes no sense.
God, no. That's crazy. Did you have any kind of markings or anything like that on your body afterwards that you remember?
I don't remember. I don't think I looked. It was all very, very odd. So those were kind of
the
symbols and that. I don't remember seeing, you know, no big disc came down or anything like that. And stuff like that. But that's where I think it started. Is I was getting some sort of
weird. So did you talk to these people after that?
Talk to who?
Well, the guy that you left and things like that. I mean, did you see them later?
I don't remember. He got himself into some pretty bad hot water there. So he, you know, it was, yeah, I didn't really have an opportunity to. But like I said, my memory is not the best. I may have, you know, this is 30 years ago, so it's hard to remember all the details.
Well, how old were you then?
16 or 17.
Yeah. Well, not a lot of people would have listened to you if you'd said anything about it anyway.
Yeah. Well, actually, 16 or 17 when I was actually going to school. But when that happened, I was probably, you know, 23, 24.
Yeah. You're still a young kid. Nobody wants to listen to you then either.
So that's what happened in California, and that's what I consider the official start of everything. Because it gets a lot weirder than that when I moved to Oregon.
You moved to one of the weirdest states ever.
Amen to
that. Between that and Washington. Good God.
I know. So I moved to Oregon because my father had purchased a Best Western. So I moved up to work in his hotel. And I became friends with one of the front desk clerks, an older lady. She was probably mid-40s at the time, and I was 20-something, early 20s. And I moved in with her. She lived on a double-wide trailer, kind of on the outskirts, country, but not super far out there. The double-wide trailer was a series of double-wide trailers that were positioned on a one-lane runway, a paved runway, that would use for like ultralights and stuff like that. There's no communication equipment. There's no tower. It's just basically, you know, you want to land your little thingy, you can land it there. And so our trailer was on that. So this is where things start to get a little out there. So when I moved in with her, I had already kind of accepted the fact of aliens and UFOs and stuff, because of the stuff that had happened in California, and she was a heavy pot smoker. And kind of half jokingly, I said, well, if you can put up, I said, I can put up with your pot smoking if you can put up with, you know, UFOs and stuff like that. She thought I was joking, but after all, everything that I'm about to tell you went down, she wasn't laughing anymore.
I'm sure.
One night, one clear and dark night, something strange happened. We were kind of night people. And 2 or 3 in the morning. That's a second part. I'm skipping myself.
Mm-hmm.
One night we were at a friend's house drinking beer. I don't think it was contaminated with LSD or anything like that. We were coming home at 10 o'clock at night, driving down the road to our double-wide trailer on the runway. Before we got there, but we were on the final stretch, I started to get a sense of impending doom. I don't know if you know what that feels like, but like you get a mm-hmm. sensation that something bad is about to happen. And I look at my roommate in the car, and I said, something's up. Something's not right. Something bad's going to happen. She stops the car, and she says, oh, yeah, I feel it, too. She probably is just saying it because I did. We eventually ventured on the remaining 500 yards to the driveway. We pull in. I get out of the car. She gets out of the car. I glance up above our trailer. It's cloudy. There's a light hovering within the cloud, stationary above the trailer. And just as I'm looking at it and my mind is able to process it, it darts off. In the clouds, like a huge light in the clouds, right above our trailer. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. But, you know, I didn't think anything. And the way I've always described it looking, it reminded me of, you know, when they have a movie premiere and they have those big spotlight deals.
Yes.
It reminded me of that. And granted, this is not in the city. This is out. There's no source that could have been. And so anyway, I still didn't register it in my mind as things were going to get super strange. So we walked up to the front door. It was unlocked, which was strange. Because at the time, we were like birdophiles. We had like 30 parrots. No joke. Weird.
Oh, God.
The living room was nothing but cages of parrots.
Oh, God.
We also had a cat, which is an interesting combination. So the door was unlocked, and we thought it was really weird. So I walk in, and the air felt thick. It felt like there was an intruder in the house.
Yes.
And so that's what I thought. I thought somebody had broken into the house. So we're, like, looking around the house. We're like, no, everything's okay. But the animals are acting weird. The cat's, like, tail between its leg. Like, something is off inside our double-wide shithole.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk, clear the place. Okay, there's nobody in here. I walk into my room. I sit down. I take off my shoes. And I go to walk back out. And I step on something. Something hard. And I look down. And there is this huge mound in the carpet right in my room as you begin to walk out. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So I call my roommate. And we're tripping out about it because this thing was not, there was not a huge lump in the carpet 3 hours earlier. So we were so enthralled by what is going on, you know, did a pipe break and is it moisture? Like we had to figure out why this thing showed up. So she takes a knife and she cuts it open and she sticks her hands under the carpet and something pokes her finger. And she pulls out the strangest metallic object you've ever seen. I cannot describe it. We'll have to post it somehow. It's about an inch and a half long. It looks like it's made from stainless steel. It comes to a rounded point at the end, but the shaft of it is triangular. And because it's a triangular shaft, it's you know, three flat surfaces. And on each flat surface... it looks like there's a laser etched line at the various levels. And then because it's a triangular shaft, it's got three edges and there's cut barbs on the edges. I mean, just really weird. It wasn't just like finding a piece of scrap metal. Whatever this is was highly advanced. Not that we couldn't do it on Earth, but it was just a really weird thing to find. So we're both tripped out by this. And so we're like, what, we don't know what this is, but it's not staying in the house. So we go, we put it in a plastic container, and we literally walk out to the runway, and we bury it under the runway. And we're trying to figure out. And so then I'm, you know, I started talking about the light above the trailer, you know, then we start thinking UFOs. So we contact MUFON.
Oh, God.
And I think we set up a time to meet somebody in Portland, this, that. Not a night or two after we had made the call to MUFON, in the middle of the night again, two cars pull out on the runway. This object is under the runway. They've got their lights facing each other, and they're acting shady. So we wait, and we're watching them, but it's kind of a little ways away, so you can't see exactly what they're doing. So they eventually leave, and we're like, hey, we got to know what they're doing in the middle of the night out there, right? So we walk out.
Yeah.
They had installed a metal box on stilts, maybe 18 inches in across, you know, maybe 12 inches high on stilts, a little thing, not huge. And it's humming and it's vibrating. And there's no external power source to it. It's self-contained. So this object is buried on the opposite side of the runway. And this strange device is more on the other side. So now we're getting completely wigged out. So this is private property. So we call the person that owns a property, because we were thinking, okay, maybe it's a transponder beacon or something, you know. It's a weird time to install one, if you know what I mean. But, so, she like, doesn't know anything about it. And so that's just making us even more freaked out. So then we go, we take this object, and a night or two later, these people show up in the middle of the night again, and they take their device.
That's creepy.
Yeah, I wish I knew what it was. I should have cracked it open. I think, if I remember correctly, it had a lock on it. So, you know, you couldn't just open it up. Should have taken a picture, but, you know, it is what it is. So I eventually hooked up with an investigator in Portland who was really, really interested in this thing. And just to summarize, we had to talk in code. We had developed a code system because I was starting to get followed around, just like in the movies, the government, you know, Crown Vic's sort of thing. I had instances of people taking my picture. I'd be sitting in a McDonald's parking lot and see somebody sneaking up on my car, and then they'd pop up two cars away from me and start taking my picture. The guy that had secured the object, he was, you know, meeting with a photographer at Starbucks, and they had all these close-up photographs of it. Somebody walks in, starts taking pictures of him sitting there, and then walks by trying to look at the pictures, and they're trying to hide the pictures. Stuff like that. And this went on for
just
months.
Enough to let you know that you're being followed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so there was a lot that went on with that. And eventually it had generated quite a bit of interest. What we learned testing it in Portland, which, you know, we couldn't do a whole lot. I don't know who he took it to or anything like that, is it was not radioactive. If you measured it with a micrometer at various, you know, angles of it,
right.
It was down.
Right.
It was down. It was down to like 1 micron or something like that, or no microns. I mean, it was precision built. So it eventually was sent to. So he got in touch with the very famous author and abductee Whitley Strieber, the author of Communion.
Yes.
And he's also the author of The Howling and, you know, some really famous horror novels. So he sent this object to Texas, to a laboratory in Texas, who ran some preliminary tests on it, mass spectrometer and stuff like that. And they were really interested in it because it was tripping them out. In fact, I do remember exactly what the memo from the lab said. And the very first word on the memo was weird, exclamation point. I'm still looking into the green stuff on it. Apparently it had green stuff. I don't know what it was.
Ew.
And then it said, we're still checking the aircraft industry. And what they wanted to do was a really advanced test, isotopic ratios, to determine whether or not the elements in it were terrestrial or not. So
what
out of
year
sheer
was this? Do you remember?
This was 19... It had to have been in the 90s, mid-90s, early 90s. Mid-90s, probably.
Okay. Just for reference.
Yeah, so they wanted to do this isotopic ratio testing. Well, the military uses this lab. It's like their biggest business. And the military said, if you continue to do these independent studies, we're going to pull our contracts. So it never got tested any further. Now, whether that pertained specifically to what they were doing with my object, possibly, or it just could have been bad timing, and that they were probably, but, and they were just, maybe the lab was doing a lot of this sort of thing and the government didn't like it, of course. So it died right there. Nothing ever went beyond that. So this investigator in Portland, he had been holding this object in secret for 20 years. And just recently, within a year, I was like, you know what? I've got to get this thing back. I have some pictures. I had a bunch of documents and stuff, which I've lost over the years, which I'm kicking myself because there's no way to get them back. But at least I managed to retain some scans of the pictures. But he had passed away. And so nothing can be done with it because I have no idea how to get my thing back. And I don't know. I know he didn't hold it. Somebody else was holding it in secret for him, and so it died there. So that's one of the big weird stories, but that isn't the end of it. It gets weirder. Hold on, I got to take a drink. I'm not used to talking so much.
You know, it's just amazing when it starts that young with you. And it keeps going. That's the stuff that people like to study. They want to dig into your history and see the connection. And your denial of everything that's happened, even though you remember the story and you do tell it, the older you've gotten, the more you want to act like it never existed. But yet, here it is. And there are so many questions and no way to get the answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's unfortunate. Hindsight's 20/20. I would have done things differently. But what can you do?
Well, the thing about it is that during this journey of your life, all this weird shit was just kind of normal. So it was kind of like, nobody else has this problem, just me? Or... you know, it's just, it's what you're used to.
Uh-huh.
And you were used to that abnormal, oh, my God, something's following me. Something's going to happen. I can feel it. I can see it. What is it? Where is it going to take me this time?
Yeah. And I'm fortunate in that nothing has happened for years. I think the aliens just decided to give up on me. Luckily.
No, I kind of think you started ignoring them and they decided to leave you alone.
Yeah, move on. Whatever. So, some other highlights of my experiences. I can't cover them all because, well, I don't remember them all, but I do remember some. And one of the other